Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Seth, it's funny, like the rushing defense for the Texans in their five losses is just so, I'll use Anthony Weaver's word, atrocious. I was doing my post for the Houston Press to preview this game, and I said, I want to go back and look game by game. I know the run defense has been bad, other than the Jacksonville game, which they won. It's been bad, but the thing that's made it even worse is that the opposing team's not, it's not just that they've run the ball well against the Texans, it's that their marquee bell cow backs, or in the case of the Ravens, the totality of their rushing offense, because they don't really have a bell cow, have had by far their best games of the year. It's not just that they've had good games, it's that they've had great games, and almost, for some of them, almost outlier games. Like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire burst onto the scene in week one against the Texans with those 138 yards on 25 carries. He hasn't really been that great since then. I mean, there's a reason they went out and got Le'Veon Bell. Like, he's been okay since then.
Oh, yeah.
But he decimated the Texans. The Ravens in week two had 230 yards on 37 carries. They had four guys rush for between 48 and 73. Four! Rush for between 48 and 73 yards in that game. Week three against Pittsburgh, James Conner, who's been all right this year. Oh, he went 18 carries for a buck 09. Dalvin Cook, been decent this year, 27 carries for a buck 30. And then Derrick Henry last week is still running, I think, somewhere. 22 carries for 212 yards.
You know, the one thing I'd say is, and this is maybe a potential bright spot, or if I were Anthony Weaver, you know, right now the defense is probably just feeling like dog crap about themselves. You gotta find something to build on. You gotta find something to work with. And let me put this disclaimer out. Firstly, I hate it when a coach gets up in a press conference and says, "Well, hey, we did a pretty good job stopping the run, except for those four plays." You know, be like, "Yeah, well, those four plays kind of matter." I do think if you look at, and when I went back and watched the coach's film and wanted to look specifically where the breakdowns were in the run game, one of my takeaways was, you know what? The vast majority of the time, they were actually doing a really good job versus the run. I mean, it's not just that, hey, they didn't do a good job versus the run, plus they had five huge carries by Derrick Henry. It was, okay, they start off the game 18-yard Derrick Henry run. That's bad, right? But then it's 3 yards, stuffed for no gain. Oh, then a 34-yard run. But then it goes to 0 yards, 2 yards, 0 yards, 2 yards, tackle for a loss of minus three, 5 yards, and then another big run of 14 yards. It was they were holding up. It's just that when the dam broke, it broke huge. And that's where you can see an avenue by which if the Texans just clean up a few things and are more consistent, especially with their linebackers and with some of their safety play, then they can be at least a respectable defense. I'm not asking them to turn around and all of a sudden be the 84 Bears, 85 Bears or something. But I think that they can be more respectable, especially versus the non-Derrick Henry type. So that's what I need to see that this week. I need to just see more consistency. And when a guy does break a big run, is it a 15-yard run instead of a 54-yard run?
Yeah.
Like those simple little things, and they can be respectable. They can be a middle-of-the-road defense, which with this offense can be all right. You know, if the offense is playing up to its capabilities, a middle-of-the-road defense is enough to be a competitive football team.
I think the most disappointing thing about the run defense, you know, aside from just the numbers, Seth, is that it's this is an experienced group. You know, it'd be one thing if they, you know, if J.J. Watt was gone now and they, you know, they moved on from Bennardrick McKinney, let's say, and they moved on from some other guys and they said, you know, it's going to be a rebuilding year on defense. And they, you know, let's say they, you know, they drafted four guys in the first three rounds defensively and we're just going to have some growing pains this year on defense. These are guys who've played a lot of football for this team in that front seven. The two, you know, the inside linebacker. I know McKinney's out for the year, but when McKinney was out there, the defense was bad stopping the run. They gave Zach Cunningham a big contract. Whitney Mercilus is getting paid what he's getting paid in large part. Why? Because he sets the edge in the run game. He's very disciplined against the run. He's been bad this year. He's been getting blocked by wide receivers. You know, like against Minnesota with BB's kid blocking him on the edge on a Kirk Cousins end around of all things. Brandon Dunn, Charles Omeni, who's in his second year now. J.J. Watt. There's just there's Brandon Scarlett. You know, these are guys who played a lot of football for this team. You know,
yeah. I think that with the linebackers, especially for one, Tyrell Adams is still coming into his own. I think, and he has some things to learn. But I think there's potential there. Zach Cunningham is obviously the big headache. I think that there is still a tendency for these guys to be trying to do too much. And some of that is that you don't trust the guys in front of you as much. I think the defensive line has actually played better and better over the last few weeks against the run. I think they're generally where they're supposed to be. They have bad snaps like everybody does, but that's why you've got three levels of a defense. You know, when a defensive lineman has a bad snap, that can't mean that the run's going to go for 40 yards. And Cunningham is in a spot where he just needs to relax and I hate to say go with the flow because that sounds like you're just letting things happen to you, but feel the flow of the run defense and not be second-guessing yourself. It's a tough spot to be in because when you're playing against a guy like Derrick Henry, it'd be kind of like if you know what you're supposed to do is relax and just, you know, find your run fits, but meanwhile you've got the threat of Derrick Henry there, it'd be like if you're having a trouble let's say a guy is having trouble, you know, maybe becoming aroused, and he knows all he needs to do is relax, but the woman is yelling at him, "What's wrong with you? Just relax! Just relax! Why can't you do this? Are you less than a man?"
Yeah.
So he's that guy right now. You're trying like hell to relax, but you know the consequences of not being able to relax make it impossible to relax.
You're overthinking it. Yeah, absolutely. Not you overthinking it. The guy you're talking about is overthinking it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Payne and Pendergast with you.
Maybe that's what. Maybe he needs a blue chew. Maybe just give out there and
could be.
You know what that would do?
Turn that little defense into a raging beast. Yeah,
you know what it would do, Sean?
Yeah.
It would keep him from. It would. Okay, so you know my big complaint with Zach Cunningham is that he's trying to stay standing the whole time when he's making tackles instead of like bending over and tackling somebody.
Yeah.
If he popped the blue chew before the game, he'd be running and walking, bending over all the time, just like when you're in junior high and you got to go up to the blackboard.
Yeah.
Those poor kids. Hey, kids, it gets better. Any of you young teenage boys out there, it gets better.
Yep.
That thing, it doesn't have a mind of its complete own, like your entire life. You won't be spending the rest of your life trying to figure out how you're going to hide this thing for 15 minutes.
No, eventually you get to start using it what it was meant for, you know? It was text message as we roll on here on a Football Friday presented by Carbach Hopadillo IPA. This goes back to the World Series when we talked about it in headlines. Would the ratings for baseball be huge if it was a 2017 matchup or rematch with the Dodgers after what happened to the Astros this year? Yeah, they'd be bigger. I don't know. Seth, you make a good point. There's a billion factors that go into viewership. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Too many people want to blame it on one thing. A lot of people want to blame it on the most divisive things because it's kind of sexy to do that. It's a variety of things from the world we're living in, to the viewing habits, to the technology that's available now, to the DVR, to all of those things. But yes, a 2017 rematch with the Dodgers and the Astros would empirically, by any measurement, be more compelling than the Rays and the Dodgers, yes.
And just as I expected, Sean, on the text line, exactly what I would have predicted was, I said, hey, ratings are complex. It's these four things. It's A, B, C, and D. And then I got four texts saying, like, no, the reason is because of A. Like, no, the reason is because of B.
Yeah.
And somebody else say, no, the reason is because of C. It's a bunch of things.
It's quite the social experiment.
Yeah. Well, part of it too, it's interesting. The way they measure ratings now is turning more and more into you're trying to figure out, okay, it's a compilation of streaming, people watching on television, people watching illegal streams, all of that. And it's kind of an arms race for it because Nielsen forever was the company that the only company that mattered. But now I think people are starting to figure out different ways to measure reach and everything.
The truth is always going to be in what are the networks willing to pay for it. You know what I mean? Regardless of what the ratings say, what are the networks willing to pay for these sports? And my guess is even with the NBA, which has seen viewership go way, way down, because it's live sports, they're going to make a ton of money on their next TV deal because it's a live sports is the last bastion of non-DVRable stuff. All right, let's see here. We've got Michael Lombardi who's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Let's do this. Five Reasons I Hate You, the Packers edition. The five reasons I hate, I'm going to help you get a sufficient amount of hate and anger built up towards the Green Bay Packers in the next segment. Five Reasons I Hate You, Packers edition is next. All right, we usually do it at 8:35 on Fridays, but we have Michael Lombardi is going to join us at 8:35 to talk about the Texans and where they go from here with their head coaching and GM search. He, of course, a former GM in the NFL and does a really nice job covering the NFL for both The Athletic and for Radio.com. He's a Radio.com NFL insider. So normally at 8:35, we would do five reasons I hate you for the team that the Texans are playing this coming Sunday. Instead, we'll do that here. Seth, let's do five reasons I hate you, the Packers edition, and you tell me if I'm working up significant hatred with any of these things to help Texan fans get ready. When you're 1-5 on the year, you probably do need to find some reasons to get up for this game. Here are my five reasons why I hate the Green Bay Packers. The first one is those stupid rubber cheese heads that those people wear. It's the lamest costume element for an NFL fan. You know the Cleveland Browns, they have they wear the dog noses or even the dog masks. I think those are pretty cool because dogs are, it's kind of a football thing. You want to have some dog in you, that sort of thing. There's probably others like Raider fan. Oh, dude, the costumes the Raider fans wear are badass. The spiky shoulder pads, the face paint. I've been to a Raider game before where Amy and I went like 6 or 7 years ago. We were the only people in that stadium that weren't dressed up in some way. It was really cool. It was like a Halloween party. It was awesome. Cheese heads, rubber pieces of cheese on top of your head. Lame as hell, man. Lame as hell. I hate those and I hate them.
And I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure California has overtaken Wisconsin in cheese production anyway. Ooh. And I know they'll say, hey, per capita my ass. I put up or shut up, Wisconsinites. You're pathetic. You can't even maintain a lead in the only thing that you have to be proud of outside of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. It's pathetic.
Shouldn't California lead in everything? Like, it's this monstrous state with a huge population.
No, they need to. If you're trying to own cheese, you better own cheese.
Gotcha. I like that.
The average consumer in the U.S. last year ate 40.4 pounds of cheese. That's a lot.
Is it? Let's see. When I was at my fattest, how much cheese was I consuming per? Like when I go to the store, not as much anymore. But I would go to the store. I'd buy a pound of American cheese. That's what I like. I like American cheese. Would I take it? How long would it take me to consume a pound of American cheese? Probably several days, actually.
You're just plus I don't believe that American is your favorite cheese. What are you talking about? American is your favorite cheese?
Yeah.
This is election year pandering out of you.
What are you talking about?
American is your favorite cheese? I get it if it's a processed cheese slice or something. But if you buy a block of cheese, you're buying American?
Yes. White American cheese. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Of course. Oh, it's white American.
That's not, I knew
it.
You were going to say
something. Yeah, of course it is, Sean.
White
of
American.
Course it is. Sean, you've already, look, Sean, we're too close to the election. You're not going to be swaying anything at this point. Just let it go.
I love me a big block of white American cheese, a glass of milk, and a bowl of vanilla ice cream. That's my favorite. That would be my last meal on my way to the electric chair.
What's your favorite color? Beige. You're the one.
Off
you're the
pink.
Kid. You were a kid. You always got the 64 pack of crayons.
That's
so you
right.
Could have, yeah.
That's
you could
right.
have peach and beige.
What's your favorite color? Sunburn. That's my favorite color. All right. So that's number one. I hate the cheese heads. I hate the maybe not the people so much, but the rubber blocks of cheese on their head. Number two, second reason to hate the Green Bay Packers. They've actually turned Tyler Irvin into a viable NFL football player. I couldn't believe this when I heard it. I was listening to a preview of a Packer game earlier this year, reading it, seeing a video on Twitter or something. Somehow an early Packer game, a video came across my timeline, and they're going, one of the keys to the game, Tyler Irvin. And I'm like, hold up, is this the same Tyler Irvin that just would fair catch things or fumble things for the Texans and was cut after 2 years as the Texans return guy slash third down back? Oh, yeah, it's that Tyler Irvin. They've actually turned him into a viable NFL football player. I hate that.
I'm incredibly shocked, Sean, that Bill O'Brien couldn't figure out a way to get the most out of him.
Out of a pass-catching third down back.
Yeah, that's really that's unfortunate. I never would have suspected that that might actually happen.
Yeah, he sucked as a Texan, and now he's actually decent as a Packer. That makes me hate the Green Bay Packers. So that's reason number two. Reason number three, and now we're getting into it here. Emo.
He's only, and by the way, it's mostly as a receiver and as a kick returner and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's tearing it up as a running back or anything. He's had four carries this season.
Yeah.
Four 10.8 yards per attempt.
Yeah. I know he's not doing everything for them, but the things he's doing at a high level for the Packers. He did nothing at a high level for the Texans. Number three reason I hate you, Green Bay Packers. Emo Aaron Rodgers. The guy is emo all the time. He sulks a lot. They drafted a quarterback. He's on a podcast talking about how he went and got drunk. I drank four fingers of tequila. He hates his family. He hates the front office. He pretty much hates anyone who's not using State Farm for their insurance provider.
I think he really. I also hate though too that I think for so long, and including these last 3 years, where when you look at his actual stats and numbers and his performance and how good his offense have been, until this year, they actually weren't all that impressive. Because he makes these circus throws, people have elevated him up to a level of quarterback that, frankly, he hasn't earned. Like, he hasn't had the consistent performances of a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady or many of those other great quarterbacks. I mean, honestly, look at his offenses from year to year. They fluctuate night and day. And whereas Tom Brady for years and years and years would always be in the top three of offenses, the scoring offenses specifically, the Packers will be like, 15th 1 year. Oh, and then the next year they're good again. And then they're back down to 17th or 18th. It hasn't been a consistent football quarterback production factory the way it is with other greats.
It has not. All right. That's reason number three. Reason number four, I hate you, Green Bay Packers. Lambeau Field is one of the more overrated dumps in the league. All right?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Hallowed ground, frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. Yeah. To quote my good friend Seth Payne, go screw yourselves. They have metal bleachers in this place. Is this a high school stadium? You have metal bleachers in a stadium that is an NFL stadium where people are paying primo season ticket prices. Metal bleachers in a stadium where it's sub-zero for two-thirds of the season. You ever sat on a metal bleacher in a sub-zero game? It's miserable. Your ass is freezing. Literally, your ass is freezing. Seth, dump, I say. Dump!
Yeah, it is. I remember I finally got a chance to play there in my 10th year in the NFL, and I wanted to get out early to warm up and see, like, oh, hey, I'm in Lambeau Field. It was just a preseason game, but it's pretty cool to be up in Lambeau Field. Very underwhelmed. Frankly, that was the reason I retired the next week. I waited for this. This is what I waited for. It'd be like if on your deathbed you all of a sudden found out that, you know, there was no heaven. You're like, oh, great, and I'm dying now. Okay, cool. Here we go. That's what it felt like.
Retiring from life, yeah.
Yeah, so, what the hell is, you know what I'm going to talk about Green Bay? Ownership. The ownership of the Green Bay Packers, which is largely just people that own worthless pieces of paper that their granddaddies handed down to them because they own stock in a company that will never pay dividends. They're idiots. They've spent all this kind of money on this Green Bay Museum and everything. You can go up and look at Curly Lambeau and just ignore the parts about where he got kicked out of the league for a while and all these other things, but sit on metal bleachers. It's ridiculous.
So
idiotic
stupid.
Owners.
So stupid. We're getting text messages. Aaron Rodgers can't chug a beer either. Screw him. That's true. I'm glad you brought that up. That's another reason to hate them.
Oh, and I guarantee you he doesn't even eat cheese, American or otherwise.
Oh. Fraud.
If he does, you know what? He eats fromage. He eats some fancy French cheese, and
Roquefort.
He drinks it with wine.
Roquefort
and he tries
cheese.
To, like, and he tells stories about how it tastes better in Napa. He'll go to some house party in Pescogi or something. I don't know if that's a place. And everybody else will be playing beer pong, and he'll be talking about, like, I don't eat American cheese. Frankly, the only time I like to eat cheese is when I'm up in the wine country with my girlfriend, who's much better than any of the skanks around here.
Exactly. All right, so
Aaron Rodgers will totally be like Tom. You know how, like, Tom Brady's going to spend a total of about 3 days a year in Boston for the rest of his life?
Right.
That'll be Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers will come in for a couple of events and then never, ever, ever be in Wisconsin.
So we're now on, like, 9 reasons to hate the Packers. Here's the last one before we get to Michael Lombardi in the next segment. Somehow they've turned 30 uninterrupted years of Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, Seth, nearly 30 years. I think Favre got there in 92, maybe. So they've had nearly 3 decades uninterrupted of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. 2 Super Bowl wins to show for it. 2 Super Bowl wins. If, man, we live in a city that has been starved for great quarterback play, and we finally have Deshaun Watson now, and hopefully we get a Super Bowl here at some point. Just one, I'll take it. That you have squandered the Hall of Fame windows of 2 of the you know, maybe 15, 20 greatest quarterbacks of all time, certainly greatest of our generation, and you gotten 2 Super Bowl wins. Again, Seth, go screw yourselves. Boom.
Yeah. They've disgraced the game is what they've done.
Yes.
They've gone, and you know what they've done? They've squandered resources. The least American thing you can do. Frankly, I'm all for just letting them run off to Canada if they'd like. You're close enough. Yeah. Just get the hell out.
Yeah.
Get the hell out. Get out of my country.
That's right. And stay out of Houston, too. We don't want any of you in our stadium on Sunday either.
Apparently, I read this article about Aaron Rodgers and how just kind of weird he is. Not in a bad way, but just like he just wants to know a bunch of stuff. He makes the youngest quarterback in the room create a quiz to test everybody at the end of the week, to test the quarterbacks in the room. But he also likes to get trivia about the upcoming opponent. So this week, there will be some trivia about Houston in that quiz that Aaron Rodgers get.
I kind of like that, actually.
You know what? We should ask him the post game. Maybe I'll sit in on the Aaron Rodgers post game and try to ask if what the Houston trivia was.
Good call. Hopefully, he's
that's
in a bad
good
mood.
Football. That's a good X's and O football heavy thing for me to do.
Yeah, absolutely. No, hopefully he's in a bad mood from losing too, because that could provide us a moment. That's when emo Aaron Rodgers might show up. Michael Lombardi, not emo. He's a former general manager in the NFL, former executive, and he is our radio.com NFL insider. We'll do a deep dive on what the Texans should be looking for in their next general manager and head coach. That is next. All right, the Texans search for a head coach and a general manager is going to be a front burner topic for a while until they find those two people. Going to be a front burner topic. And our next guest had a really good article on The Athletic a couple weeks ago about the firing of Bill O'Brien. He is our radio.com sports insider for the NFL. Insider calls are brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Learn more at Indeed.com/credit. And, of course, he's a longtime front office executive for a handful of teams in the NFL. Michael Lombardi joining us right now on Payne and Pendergast here on Sports Radio 610. Michael, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hello, Seth. How are things?
Good. We were just telling everybody about your book, Gridiron Genius, which is a great Christmas present. We were also talking about the heyday of the Deceptively Fast podcast when Michael Lombardi and Sean Pendergast were my weekly guests. That was the last time I ever put out weekly installments of the podcast. So I still appreciate you as being the one guy that could inject some regularity into my life.
It was no problem. I wonder what happened to you. I thought you disappeared. I thought you were in the witness protection program. I don't know what the hell happened to you. When Italians go missing, that's what they all think. We're in Arizona living in some community somewhere down there, you know?
Look, Michael, promises were made about my budget for that podcast, and they were not kept, is all I'll say. We're in the midst of a merger, yeah.
That's great. Michael Lombardi joining us on the show. So, Michael, the piece you had about Bill O'Brien getting let go from the Texans, I think has some really interesting detail. And look, Bill O'Brien's flaws behind the scenes are pretty well documented here, the way he interacted with people, and in your piece you say, you know, his delivery was wrong, especially with non-players. Tone matters when leading. I think some really good points in there. This is what I want to lead off with you, this question. is they're going to be hiring a new head coach. Is there a tendency for organizations, especially when coaches had such glaring flaws as O'Brien may have had communication-wise or social style-wise, is there a tendency to try to find the opposite of that guy? And is there any danger in focusing on making sure you get the opposite of the guy that you just fired?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think there's always that reaction. You know, you have a disciplinarian or you have somebody who leads with fear, and then you want somebody who's calmer and gentler. And, you know, it's just it's the reaction we have when we elect candidates in our political system. You know, so we always want the opposite of what we had before. So that's just human nature. But I think the concern I have for Texan fans is, look, I don't understand the Corn Ferry thing, Jed Hughes. You know, I mean, his track record of picking people, he's got this list. It's a political movement. It's not necessarily the best and the brightest. Bill Walsh, and I wrote about this in my book, Gridiron Genius, always talked about how the NFL was never the best and the brightest. It was always a political system. And if you weren't in the political system, you weren't ever going to be able to achieve what you wanted. And I think that's right. I mean, I understand why teams want to hire a consulting firm, you know, a search firm to help them to make sure they vet the candidates, that there's nothing in their past that could come back to haunt them. But we're talking about football here, man. We're talking about practice. We're talking about football. We're talking about leadership. And I think that unless you understand what it takes to ask the right questions, and I wrote about it in my book, of a head coach or of a general manager, I don't know how you could pick the right guy. I mean, this has been going on, and there's been a lot of poor picks.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I was looking at that chapter in your book, Gridiron Genius, before you came on, and I was trying to figure out a way to make it friendly for radio, because in a nutshell, your list of questions you want to ask a head coach is an entire chapter long. There's so many things that go into it, and I wonder, in this article in The Athletic a couple of weeks ago, you pointed out that, hey, Cal McNair, as NFL owners go, is pretty actively around. You know, he has an office in the building. He's at practices. And that's not necessarily the case with a whole lot of owners. I guess, do you think that's a good thing, a bad thing, or does it just depend on, you know, how good Cal is at doing what he's doing?
I think it's a good thing, actually. I think you want him engaged. You want to teach him what it takes to build a culture or organization. You want to teach him about what champions look like. You want to teach him about how we can sustain this organization long after I'm gone, long after you're gone, when you pass this down to the next generation. We want this to be something that stands the test of time. And the only way we can do that is through you. It's not through who you hire. It's through you. It's what you want it to be. I used to say this to Jimmy Haslam all the time. Tell me what you want the team to be. Tell me who you want it to be. And then let me put it into that vision. And then that vision will always stay the same. When you become a team that, oh, this is the way we've always done this, or this is the way the Steelers always do things, you got it. That's when you have a culture. But when you're randomly selecting and you've got Jed Hughes involved in the decision making, you're not going to go anywhere. You're going to be picking on what Jed Hughes wants or what Corn Ferry wants or what the flavor of the month is. That's not how you build sustainable organizations in any profession. You need to be able to come in and hire somebody who's going to work with the owner and build a culture. It's not about who can pick the best players. It's about who can assemble the best team. And, you know, and that's what we've lost sight of. I mean, we see it last night on television. I mean, you know, we're losing sight of head coaches that understand how to set up game plans, how to give yourself a chance to win the game, and how to execute that plan, and how to manage the game within the game. And because we've become a generation of Madden basement players, you know, where we're just calling plays at a random base, these organizations are being run historically bad, and they've been run by people that don't have the qualifications to really do it. It's what I call the Dunning-Kruger effect. The Dunning-Kruger effect is a management bias that is in place when people that actually think they know, but they really don't. The perfect example would be James Dolan at the Knicks, Jerry Jones at the Cowboys. 25 years he's been the owner of the Cowboys since 1995, their last Super Bowl. They've been in 10 playoff games, and they have yet to been to the Final Four. And so you're telling me they're doing it the right way? This is what bothers me.
Is that where – okay, and I'm glad that you boiled it down to that, the owner telling a general manager or coach what they want the team to be. Is it as simple as that in your mind that, okay, with the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Rooney family kind of knows what they want their team to be, and then they hire the people and just expect them to get that vision? I mean, is it that simple?
It's really that simple, right? So, like, look, I can't tell Cal McNair what he wants. I'm not asking Cal McNair to tell me what he wants to run on 3rd and 7. I'm not asking Cal McNair to tell me what kind of offensive lineman he likes. I want Cal McNair to tell me, look, here's what I want to be. I want to be an organization that is big, it's fast, it's athletic. We're not going to take anybody who has any shady backgrounds in terms of domestic violence, whatever he believes in, right? Just give me the rules. Give me the rules, and then we'll go play the game. And then we're going to set up a grading system that's going to adhere to what the philosophy is of the owner. And that's not going to change. But we have it backwards. So, you know, you hire a running back coach, right? And he likes running backs that do this. Well, then he leaves. What happens to the running back coach that comes in? He doesn't like what they do. You can't have an organization like that. You have to have a paramilitary structure that works halfway down. The head coach has got to say, these are the kind of running backs I like. These are the kind of linemen I want. I'm not going anywhere. And we're going to operate with these type of players. It's scouting inside out, not outside in. And so many organizations are relying on, well, the quarterback coach thinks he likes this kind of player. Well, you know, Kellen Moore's not going to change the offense up in Dallas because Dak got injured. Seriously? Kellen Moore? What is Kellen Moore even talking about? Like, seriously? That's when you know you have no culture. That's when you know you have no chance, right? Kellen Moore's telling you what he thinks. That's Mike McCarthy's job. And that's the problem, and that's what the owner's got to be able to deliver.
Michael Lombardi joining us on Sports Radio 610. He's our radio.com NFL insider. You know, Michael, as you describe culture and you lay that out, I think there's probably Texan fans sitting here listening thinking, well, I think Bill O'Brien thought he was putting a culture together here, whether it came from Cal McNair or whether it was the brainchild of O'Brien and Jack Easterby. They had this mantra of dependable, tough, smart. They had T-shirts that they wore around the building. They brought it up. They had an acronym, DTS, for it that they'd bring up describing certain players. Did ultimately Bill O'Brien overvalue maybe some of those DTS qualities when it came to putting this roster together?
Well, I think the roster, let's include everybody, right? So the hardest thing, I think, for most ex-Belichickian employees that try to establish their vision of the culture is getting people to buy into their vision of the culture. It's a challenge. It really is. It's a challenge because when you hire coaches with experience, that's why Belichick has a bunch of coaches on his staff that really haven't been anywhere else. You know, he doesn't have very many ex-defensive coordinators or ex-secondary coaches. We all train from within. And we started this in Cleveland in 1991 when we first got there together. We felt like it was harder to train It was harder to retrain than train. So we hired a bunch of young people. We hired the Eric Manginis, the Thomas Dimitroffs, the Mike Tannenbaums, the Scott Pioli's, the Ozzie Newsom's, the Eric Manginis. We hired all those guys, the George Kikinis's. We hired and we trained them. And so they only really knew one way of thinking. And I think when these guys go to Houston and you're trying to establish that culture, that's a challenge to do. And I think part of the organization and what I wrote about in my column was I think that sometimes Bill is leading with an emotional decision phase, and you can't do that. You've got to be calm, and you also have to have a culture. It's one thing about describing what kind of player you want. You got to have a culture within the building that has the same thing, and I think that's the missing point.
Michael Lombardi joins us. Michael, you've interviewed for general manager jobs, obviously, and you've interviewed head coaches. I'm trying to figure out what it's going to be like for a potential general manager to come and interview with the Texans, and he's going to be sitting down with Cal McNair, but he's also going to have this other guy in the room, Jack Easterby. And if I'm a potential GM candidate, I would imagine I'm going to be kind of concerned about, okay, who's in control here? Who am I reporting to? Do you have any clarity on that? You spent a whole lot of time in New England. You know Jack Easterby. Like, we're all very curious about this Jack Easterby dynamic.
Well, I think, look, I wouldn't have a problem sitting with Jack. I mean, Jack is, you know, Jack's a culture builder. Jack understands culture. Jack understands how to get players to motivate. Jack understands how to build a team in terms of getting everybody working together. I mean, that I've been in interview rooms for people that don't know anything about football. Jack being in the room would be a blessing. I think that, you know, Jack does a really good job at what he does, and I think that that's important for the Texans. But to me, is Jed Hughes going to be in the room? He's going to ask me questions about football? Seriously? You know, are you going to ask me about what I think? I mean, not that I'm going to interview for the job, not that Jed Hughes would ever call me for the job. The reality of it is sometimes you got to have somebody directing the interview that understands where we are. Because here's the key component. The guy who gets the GM job, the guy who gets the head coaching job, his vision is going to be, what are we going to do moving forward? When in reality, he needs to figure out what broke down and spend 60 days, 2 months figuring out what went wrong in Houston, and then solve those problems before you move forward. And in the interview process, everybody's talking about moving forward when you've got to be able to explain what happened in the past.
Michael Lombardi joining us. Michael, last one before we let you go. At 1-5, as you can imagine, a lot of the talk here has turned to the trade deadline as opposed to the Texans' playoff chances. J.J. Watt, right in the middle of the conversation on shows like this, he was asked about it in his press conference this week, and there's a handful of other players that might be able to fetch some degree of draft capital on this team. I'm curious, if you were looking at this job as a prospective general manager, would the job look more attractive to you if the Texans actually did go flip some of these guys at the trade deadline for some draft capital? We know they're missing their first and second round pick already this year from the Tunsil deal. Or would you rather they leave it in place and it be something where you actually go get some of that draft capital with some of those assets that they have?
Well, I think they should hire somebody rather quickly. I think they should. I mean, because next year they have 38 players under contract and they're over the cap by about $7 million or more. They're going to have to get that cap under control next year because it could go down and you could have serious problems. I think the thing you need to do is get somebody in there that can understand it and have a way to work through it. I mean, JJ's on the cap next year for $15 million in base salary. Now, you know, maybe McNair says to you, look, I want JJ to finish his career here. I don't care what we have to do that. Let's do it. But we've got to make some decisions whether we're going to bring back Nick Martin, whether we're going to re-sign David Johnson or keep him on the team or whatever we're going to do. I think those are the issues you've got to work your way through because that next year cap's really, really in danger. I'm not as worried about the draft picks. You're going to lose those. You got a good player in Tunsil. We got to make him a better player. I'm worried more about player development. Like, where is our player development program going to come in? That's the first thing I would work on as the next general manager. How are we going to develop the players? How are we going to get the players to play better? How are we going to get Xavier Howard Titus to be the right tackle that we need him to be the first round pick that we need him to be. We got to make these players better. I think that's the big thing. And you know, if you can get that cap room and a little bit more comfortability, then I think you got to try to do it.
Great stuff. Radio.com NFL insider Michael Lombardi joining us. Insider calls brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Learn more at Indeed.com/credit. Michael, always appreciate the time. Great insight, and keep up the great
Thank
work.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, guys.
All right, thanks, Michael. Michael Lombardi right. joining us on the program.
Everybody, and if you're on Twitter, follow him at @MLombardNFL. It's always nice for guests after they leave to get a couple nice little compliments from listeners.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys were great on the show, because then they might be more likely to come on again. So if you really enjoyed that interview, let them know on Twitter.
Absolutely. All right, we head into the 9 o'clock hour. Bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, we'll spend a few minutes with Lisa Ann getting you ready for fantasy football in Week 7. Let's circle back to the Packers and the Texans. Is this the best quarterback battle of the weekend in Week 7? We'll discuss it next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.